I have to take his place. But if I had a patronage network of older magicians, I wondered, what could I do? The thought nagged at my mind as I wrapped the filigree around the gemstone, then linked it to the chain. A simple addition to the original spell form would make it difficult for anyone to see, unless their attention was called to it. I didn't think it would trigger any household wards if Janine took it back to her house, although it was impossible to be sure. Dad had told me that our wards noted and logged anything our guests carried that might be dangerous. I'll have to ask her after she goes home for the holidays, I thought. I carved the runes into the metal, one by one. The spell form wouldn't take shape until the last one was in place, and I couldn't do that until I managed to get Janine into the workroom. But I could get the amulet as close to finished as possible. I wonder what will happen if someone else wears the amulet. I puzzled over it for a long moment as I finished the second-to-last rune. It seemed to glow, just for a second. I stared, then donned my spectacles. There was nothing, not even a flicker of magic. Magister Tallyman had worked hard to keep the tiny workroom as magicless as possible. Maybe I'd just imagined it. Maybe... Or maybe there was some magic already infused into the metal, I mused. It should have been possible, but I knew it wasn't. And that might mess up the spell form. I examined the amulet carefully, turning it over and over in my hands. There was nothing, no flicker of magic at all. And yet I was sure I'd seen a glow. I was tired, perhaps too tired to think straight. Maybe I should go straight to bed after dinner. But I'd promised Rose I'd meet her in the library. The bell rang. I put the amulet in a drawer, then picked up my notes and hurried out of the tiny room. Magister Tallyman was standing by the table, watching Akin as he worked on a complicated-looking device of power. I was careful not to step too close as Akin carved runes into the metal. Who knew what my presence would do? Nothing. I thought. It was a bitter thought. I stood next to Dad as he forged, and Mum as she brewed, and nothing happened. And yet, if Rose's presence had caused a cauldron to explode, who knew what my presence would do if things were reversed? The thought bothered me, more than I cared to admit. If I had power, why could I do nothing but forge? Surely I could do more. And if I didn't have power, where did the power come from? The question ran through my mind time and time again. I had a feeling I'd never forget it until I found a satisfactory answer.
Very good,
Magister Tallyman said. He looked up.
Caitlin, did you make any progress?
I think I'm starting to understand some of the equations, I said. It was true enough. But I'm going to need some time in the library to really come to grips with it.
Take your time, Magister Tallyman said.
He smiled.
The Triad would not be amused if the entire school took flight.
Akin snickered as he stepped back from the workbench.
The entire building would come crashing down, he said. It would be worse than the South Wing.
Magister Tallyman looked distantly unamused. Someone had blown up the South Wing a year or two before I'd been sent to school. No one knew what had happened, but even I had heard the rumors. There had been threats of inquiries from Magus Court, perhaps even a royal inquest. And yet the truth, whatever it was, had been firmly buried. I wondered suddenly just what Magister Tallyman knew about it. He'd been a teacher for decades. And he wouldn't tell if we asked, I thought. I didn't think the teachers were obliged to swear oaths of perpetual secrecy, but talking out of turn could cost them their jobs. Whatever it was, it had to have been bad.
Go have your dinner,
he said curtly. He sounded distracted, as if he was thinking about something else. It was a bad habit in a forger.
We'll finish up later.
We nodded and made our escape. Chapter 16. This equation doesn't make sense, Rose said as we settled into our study room. Why can't I understand it? I took the sheet and scanned it. You're mixing up two of the variables, I said. Rose had progressed by leaps and bounds, but she had a long way to go before she matched anyone who'd been raised in a magical household. It didn't help that she'd only started studying magical equations a few months ago. This one needs to be separated from that one until you're ready to cast the spell. Rose made a face. Why don't they just say that? It's one of the points that everyone is expected to know. I groaned in frustration. How many things did I take for granted? How many things did I know that just weren't so? We may need to go over the basics again. Or practice with newer spells instead, Rose said. Did your head hurt when it was pounded into your skull? I winced. I'd studied magical theory extensively, believing that understanding how magic actually worked would allow me to use my talents. And I'd been good at theoretical magic, good enough to win prizes if I'd been able to use what I'd learned. I could devise a spell, if I wanted, but I couldn't cast it. Rose couldn't devise a spell, yet she could make one work if I gave it to her. Between us, I supposed we would make a pretty fair team. I had more time to study the basics, I said. I'd spent 2 years learning the basics, as well as several languages that were useless outside magic studies. Rose had less than 6 months to learn enough to let her pass the exams. And I had better tutors. Rose shot me a warm look. You're a good tutor. I shook my head. I couldn't demonstrate the spells, and I couldn't demonstrate how theory fitted into practical spellcasting. I could teach Rose a great deal, and I had taught Rose a great deal, but I had my limits. Rose really needed an upperclassman, or a private tutor, to make sure she had a solid grounding in theory before it was too late. You need to restart the equation, I said. I could have done it for her, and I was tempted to do just that, but Magister von Rupert might just call on Rose to explain her work. She'd be in trouble if she couldn't explain what she'd done. This time, keep all of the variables separate until the very end. I reached for a stack of reference books and picked up the top volume. I'd found every book within reach on the subject of old runes. Although Magister Talimann had warned me that a number of old runes on the flying machine diagrams weren't included in modern textbooks. I had no idea if that was because the runes were useless, or their original meaning had been forgotten long ago. But it didn't matter. If I was lucky, I might find something close enough to the mystery runes to give me a good idea what they did. And if I wasn't lucky, it might just be time for some experiments, I thought. My fingers touched dust as I opened the book. No one had looked at it in years, I guessed. It shouldn't have surprised me. There were more modern textbooks, ones that detailed every rune and sigil we knew. And yet, I knew just how hard my parents, and every other magician in the city, worked to mine secrets from the past. I was surprised that an older student hadn't found the ancient book and studied it intensively. But they wouldn't have left the book here if they thought it still held secrets to unlock, I told myself, as I passed out the text. Dad has volumes that he will never share with anyone outside the family. The book felt old against my bare fingers. It lacked even basic protective spells. The runes, one to a page, were faded, some so faint that it was hard to be sure they were complete. And yet most of them were known runes. The ones that didn't have a known purpose might be useful, or they might be maker's marks that had been mistaken for ancient runes. I passed them out one by one, cursing the writer under my breath. I'd been taught the language, but whoever had written the book seemed to delight in elliptical statements that confused me more often than not. I had to reread each section several times to be sure I understood the meaning. "This is a pain," I muttered. Rose looked up, sympathetically. Do you have to parse out the runes? Unless I want to start experimenting, I said.
Magister Talliman would let me experiment, wouldn't he? We could go somewhere well away from the school. There was a campus somewhere in the hills, wasn't there? I'd been told there was a secondary building at the South Pole, but I didn't believe it. It would be better to have a good idea of what I was doing first. I felt a flicker of envy for the original designer. He'd have known all the secrets, all the little tricks I had to figure out for myself. I'd advance, I was sure, and so would the school. Judes wanted a program to train zeros, didn't they? But I would have cut off my hair for a chance to study with the ancient magicians. They could have told me everything I needed to know. The door opened. I looked up, alarmed. If a bunch of upperclassmen wanted to turf us out... Bella stepped into the room. "Cat," she said shortly. She held a large sheaf of papers under her arm. "I was told I'd find you here." "Oh," I said. "Who told you that?" "The librarian," Bella said. She walked over to the table. "And you told me you'd help me with my homework." "As long as you help us with ours," I said. I gave her a pleasant smile. "Rose needs some practical assistance." Bella frowned. "And you think I can help her?" "Yes," I said. I reached for the papers. "Why don't you show her how the equations translate to real life while I look at your homework?" Bella nodded and motioned for Rose to join her at the table. Rose didn't look happy. Bella hadn't been as bad as Alana, yet she'd bullied Rose too. But she followed Bella anyway. I opened the papers and skimmed them. Bella had been trying, I supposed, but it was clear that she'd written the essays in a hurry. Magister von Rupert would know it too. It was hard to imagine him handing out detentions and punishment essays with a free hand, but his partner was punitive enough for both of them. Bella would be in deep trouble if she didn't rewrite at least two of the papers before her next class. "Each of the equations determine a different variable," Bella was saying. She sounded marginally surer of herself. "This one determines the amount of power you push into the spell. This one determines the range. This one determines precisely what happens when the spell is triggered. Changing even one of the variables will get you a different result." "Like you need to change the geometric diagrams you've drawn out here," I called without looking up. "The spell form isn't very stable." "I can balance the spell form," Bella pointed out crossly. "Not unless you keep your mind on it," I countered. It wasn't something I'd actually done, of course, but I knew the theory. "You won't be able to cast a second spell until the first one is completed." Bella made a rude sound. "Seconds at best. Even you couldn't dodge a spell indefinitely." "It would cost you the chance to get a second spell off," Rose put in. "Is that why I managed to tag Drina?" I nodded. I'd forced Rose to practice casting spell after spell in quick succession, even though it had drained her. My sisters might have gotten far too used to hexing a target that couldn't hex back. I wondered, sourly, if Isabella actually had an advantage over Alana. She would have tried to hex Aiken, who was perfectly capable of throwing spells back at her. If nothing else, she'd know how to dodge. "You need to balance the spell form for later," I said. I drew out a set of pencil lines on her diagram. "You can compensate for poor planning now, I think, but later, something more advanced will just come apart when you try to cast it." "Hmm," Bella said. I read through the rest of her essays one by one, trying to ignore the moments of envy, even jealousy, when I heard her demonstrating the spell time and time again. I had a talent of my own, didn't I? I had a unique talent. And yet, it was limited. I'd never be casting spells from my fingertips, or breathing words that would change the course of entire nations. "I'll just be forging the tools," I thought instead. "I think I understand it now," Rose said when Bella had finished. "But why do the variables need to be altered?" Bella shot me a challenging look. I scowled back.
The original spell is designed for a very specific set of circumstances, I said. We'd gone through something similar before, hadn't we? You need to understand the theory so you can modify the spell to suit your needs. I took a breath. For example, transfiguring someone into a frog takes less energy than turning them into a donkey. But you can change the spell so that it does turn someone into a donkey. Yet if you do, the power requirements suddenly become a great deal higher. If you don't change those, the spell will either fail or simply not last as long as you might wish. Rose looked blank. Why does turning someone into a frog take less energy than turning someone into a donkey? I glanced at Bella, who shrugged. I'd never really thought about it. Being turned into a small hopping thing was a hazard of growing up in my family's hall. It was just part of life. I really hadn't stopped to consider why the power requirements might be different. It was something to think about, perhaps. I wondered absently what Magister Niven would say if I asked him. I don't know, I admitted. The answer might be somewhere in the theory books. I made a mental note to look when I had a moment. Dad and his tutors hadn't discussed it with me, but that proved nothing. It just does. Magister Niven would not be happy with that answer, Bella said. We shared a giggle. It gave me a warm feeling inside. He'd want you to come up with a better theory. Perhaps, I said. But why? I shook my head. I wasn't going to solve that problem overnight. I needed to figure out, first, if anyone else had already solved it. Bella cleared her throat. What did you make of my essays? You need to rewrite these two at least, I said. I passed them over to her. And I've already told you about the diagrams. Joy, Bella said. Thank you, I suppose. You're welcome, I said. She left, closing the door firmly behind her. I shared a look with Rose, then went back to my runes. The bell rang 30 minutes later. I put the book aside for further study and followed Rose out of the library. The rest of the students were checking books out or pleading to be allowed to stay longer. I wondered what they'd do when exam season rolled around. They still had several months before their progress was formally tested. Rose shot me a sidelong look as we walked down the corridor. Are we going to be spending all of our time in the library? I looked back in surprise. There wasn't much else to do, was there? Jude's grounds weren't that big, and besides, they were dominated by upperclassmen. I'd been cautioned against leaving the school, and I wouldn't have left in any case. We were in Watershallet. Family name or not, it wasn't the kind of place I wanted to explore without an escort. I could try and talk an upperclassman into escorting us, I thought. We might be able to go for a walk. The thought tempted me for a few moments before I dismissed it. An upperclassman who took us over the walls would probably be unceremoniously expelled on the spot. Dad wouldn't help her either. He'd be more likely to want the offender hung, drawn, and quartered. I don't know, I said. Netball wasn't my thing, or hers either. I'd done my best to stay away from the social clubs. Even chess could turn nasty if one player was magician and the other was a zero. Where do you want to go? There are parts of the school that I've never seen, Rose said. We should go exploring. I had to smile. Jude's was immense. There were entire wings that hadn't been used for decades, secret passages and chambers that hadn't seen the light of day. We could go exploring if we wished. I was tempted, even though I had far too much to do. We'd certainly have far less time to explore in the years to come. Why not? It was a pleasant thought. We might find the lost treasure of Master Jude. Or a secret passageway leading out of the school, Rose said. How much would that secret be worth? I shrugged. If there was a secret passage like that, I would be very surprised. The staff might turn a blind eye to upperclassmen sneaking over the walls,
if they made it through the network of wards and traps. But they never tolerate a secret passageway. I wasn't even sure the wards would notice if there was a passageway. The building was so poorly designed that warding the whole complex had to be an absolute nightmare. A secret passage would just make matters worse. It would be fun, I said. I didn't think we'd find anything new, but it would be fun. And we would learn more about the school. Dudes had secrets. Perhaps we'd discover some that had been lost long ago. A flash of light darted up the corridor. Rose let out a yelp, throwing up her hands an instant before she shrank and became a frog. A second spell struck me, only to rebound back in the direction it had come. I heard someone cry out, an instant before she was silenced. But she wasn't alone. Isabella stepped out of the shadows. "Well," she said. She didn't look at her friend. I wondered absently just who she'd talked into supporting her. "The cheat!" I slipped my hand into my pocket. I'd stowed a couple of artifacts there. "I didn't cheat," I said. I felt a flash of cold irritation. She'd demanded satisfaction, not me. "There's no rule against bringing objects of power into a dueling circle." Isabella glared at me. "Only because no one thought it might be necessary." I probably shouldn't have baited her, but I couldn't resist. "Then they really should have paid more attention in Magister Niven's class," I said. The thought made me smile. "They assumed I couldn't bring an object of power, let alone more than one, into a circle. How careless of them." "My father is working on changing the rules," Isabella snapped. "Soon no one will be able to bring anything into the dueling circle, and then I will challenge you again, and again." I felt my blood run cold. I did my best to hide it. "I can't cast spells," I said. If I had to face her without my earrings, if nothing else, I was doomed. "You know it. And you shouldn't even be here," Isabella sneered. Her voice hardened. "You can't even fight fair." Rose croaked. I didn't dare take my eyes off Isabella, let alone draw the dispeller from my pocket and free Rose. I forced myself to face her. "You're a coward, aren't you? You'll hex someone who can't defend herself. But when she finds a way to fight back, it's unfair." Her face flushed bright red. "You utter..." An upperclassman walked around the corner. "Fighting in the halls," she said. Her eyes flickered over us, resting on me for a long moment, before she pointed a long finger at Isabella. "Report to the janitorial staff. I'm sure they'll find work for you to do." Isabella gaped. Her face turned pale. "I... go," the upperclassman ordered. Her voice was utterly unyielding. "Now." I watched as Isabella turned and scurried off. The older girl hadn't seen the struggle begin, I thought. She hadn't known, she couldn't have known, which of us had started it. And yet she'd come down hard on Isabella. I wasn't sure if that was a good thing or not. "Caitlin," the upperclassman said. She snapped her fingers at Rose, who froze. "I would like you to forge something for me." She sounded, I reflected, as though she thought she was the first person to have thought of asking me for a private commission. I wasn't going to tell her otherwise. "I see," I said instead. She could at least have turned Rose back before freezing her, but I suspected she wanted this discussion to be private. "What would you like me to forge?" The upperclassman beamed. "I want something very simple," she said. I had the feeling it wasn't going to be remotely simple. "And I will pay very well." Chapter 17.
It turned out, I discovered over the next few days, that quite a few students were having the idea of asking me for a private commission or two. Their requests surprised me, although I suppose they probably shouldn't have. Everyone wanted an object of power, and yet, I made a list of requests, then started to plan out how best to meet them. The prospects of dozens of upperclassmen owing me a favor was too tempting to resist. "Perhaps you should offer to provide services instead," Rose said when I told her about the latest request. A student wanted an object of power that would protect him from hexes while playing football. "You could rent out your work and make more money." I touched one of my earrings as I thought about it. It might work. It certainly should work. An object of power that wasn't blood-bonded would be less effective than something I'd made for a specific person. But if all they wanted was to cleanse themselves of spells, it should work. I could give Janine or someone like her an hour with a necklace, then reclaim it. They wouldn't pay me so much, and I didn't just want money. But it might be worthwhile. But no one is going to give me an open-ended favor merely for an hour with an object of power, I thought. They'll insist on paying in cash or smaller favors. I don't need money, I said. Favors would be more useful. Maybe for later, Rose said. But money would buy you favors, wouldn't it? I shrugged. Objects of power were priceless. No, they'd been priceless. My father was one of the richest men in the city, yet even he couldn't have bought one of the rarer objects of power. He'd have had to practically bankrupt himself to purchase a smaller one. And a family sword, something blood-bonded to a specific line, would be priceless to its owners and worthless to everyone else. Dad wouldn't waste his money purchasing something he couldn't use. "It depends on the favor," I said. "There are some things money just can't buy." Rose snorted. "Which matters very little to those who struggle to put bread on the table," she said. She pointed a finger at me. "What will you do when you run out of supplies?" She had a point, I admitted as we made our way to the next classroom. Magister Tallyman had said I could draw from his supply cupboards, but that wouldn't last. I doubted I'd ever become an upperclassman, even if the staff did rewrite the curriculum for me. It was more likely they'd put me in an independent studies course, once they worked the kinks out of the system. Or let me leave school after completing my fifth-year exams. After that, I'll have to raise prices, I thought. Buying the raw materials to make objects of power would be very expensive, and it will be harder to pick and choose my clients. I spent the rest of the day mulling over it, feeling a little unsure of myself. I needed a patronage network. And it was good to have students, particularly upperclassmen, paying attention to me. I hadn't had so many people trying to get into my good books since the rumors about my magic, or lack of magic, had started to spread. I wanted Alana and Bella to see their useless sister doing well for herself. I owed them for every hex, for every cruel taunt, for every snide remark detailing what would happen to me when my parents died. It still nagged at me as I walked into the workroom at the end of the day. Aiken was already there, working on a device of power. I nodded to him and strode over to the workbench, silently running through Magister Tallyman's planned set of experiments. I wasn't too pleased about him getting involved. I'd been happier trying to pass out my talents on my own. But I knew I should be relieved. Magister Tallyman had more than earned his reputation. "And you were glad enough of the prospect of studying under him," a little voice whispered at the back of my head. "Weren't you?"
"I'm sorry I'm late,"
Magister Tallyman said, striding into the room.
"I trust you weren't too bored."
"No, sir,"
Aiken said.
"I was just finishing my work."
Magister Tallyman glanced at it, then nodded curtly.
"Come with me, both of you," he ordered. "I've set up an experimental chamber for us."
We followed him through a series of passageways and into a larger workroom. It looked oddly bare. even though there was a wooden work table and a set of supply cupboards. The walls were plain stone, without even a single rune linked into the ward network. A small selection of tools and a single sheet of instructions lay on the table. I scanned them quickly and frowned. The object of power was really nothing more than a set of interlocking discs on a horizontal axis that were, apparently, supposed to spin in unison. If it had a purpose, beyond decoration, no one had been able to figure it out.
"Cut," Magister Tullyman said. "How quickly could you make this?"
I calculated it quickly. "Not long," I said. "Half an hour, perhaps." Magister Tullyman nodded.
"Then start making one," he said. "Aiken and I will be in the next room."
"Yes, sir," I said. I felt my fingers tingle in anticipation of the challenge as I opened the storage cabinets and started to assemble the materials. Sheets of copper, iron, and a surprisingly flimsy gold foil, all wrapped in cloth to keep them pure. I wiped them down anyway, just to be sure, then picked up my tools and went to work. The object of power was astonishingly simple, almost as simple as the fan I'd built weeks ago. And yet we honestly didn't know what it did. But it shouldn't be anything dangerous, I told myself. The runes made the disc spin, and that was it. I'd checked again and again just to be sure. It's nothing more than a piece of art. The object of power took shape in front of me, piece by piece. I took a long breath as the last of the runes fell into place, the object glowing briefly as it started to spin. A faint light flared up as the disc spun faster and faster, casting an eerie radiance over the scene, but nothing else happened. I guessed I'd been right. It was nothing more than a piece of art. "Unless it's part of a greater design," I speculated. There were hundreds of objects of power that had no discernible purpose. Magister Tallyman's flying machine was actually a trio of interlocking objects of power, if my calculations were correct. Perhaps it's only useless because we don't know what the other parts are meant to look like. I puzzled over it as Magister Tallyman stepped back into the room.
"Very good, Cat," he said, examining the spinning discs. "You may keep it, if you wish."
"Thanks," I said. I remembered Magister Niven's words and frowned. Where was the power coming from? "What do you want me to do now?"
"I want you and Aiken to build a second object of power," Magister Tullyman said. "But he's going to be the one to shape the discs."
I felt an odd rush of emotion as I carried the object of power into the main workroom and then returned. It was important, I knew it was important, to know just how much of the work could be done by someone else, by someone who lacked my talent. But I couldn't help feeling conflicted. What if Aiken managed to forge his own objects of power? Cold logic told me that it was unlikely that a 12-year-old would solve a puzzle that had baffled the greatest minds in sorcerer's history. Raw emotion reminded me that I had cracked the mystery. And what one magician, or whatever I was, could do, another could duplicate. My heart clenched as I watched him go to work. What if... Aiken worked with practiced ease, cutting the discs out of the metal and placing them gently on the workbench. I kept my distance, torn between admiration for his obvious skill and a deep ache that tore at me. I liked Aiken, perhaps more than I should, but his sister was a very different matter, and our families had been enemies for decades. Outside Jude's, would we still be friends? Or would he hex me the moment he saw me? His father would expect him to do just that, I thought sourly. I'd only seen Lord Carioca Ruben once, but he'd worried me. I would have felt sorry for Isabella if she hadn't been so horrible to me. Her father had good reason to be very annoyed at her. And if he really can get the rules rewritten... I pushed the thought out of my head as Aiken finished the third disc. Magister Tullyman checked them, using a compass and ruler to make sure they were perfect. I watched, unsure what I felt. It would be easier, much easier, if someone else could do some of the work, but it would diminish my value. I gritted my teeth as Magister Tallyman pronounced the discs perfect. I wasn't going back to being useless. I wasn't.
"Cat," Magister Tallyman said. "See if you can put them together."
I took the discs. A sour feeling rose up within me, urging me to make a tiny error that would render the object of power nothing more than a piece of scrap metal. It wouldn't be hard either, but Magister Tallyman would notice. He was watching me like a hawk, silently noting everything I did. And I admired him too much to want him angry at me. And Dad wouldn't be pleased either, I reminded myself. Dad and Mum took experiments seriously. Outright sabotage would get me in real trouble, whatever the motive. I'd be grounded for the rest of my life. I carved out the runes, one by one. It felt odd, although I couldn't put my finger on how or why. I ground my teeth in frustration. I'd been told that experimental magicians often had odd feelings when something was about to go spectacularly wrong, but nothing they'd been able to describe to me. Perhaps something was about to go wrong. Or maybe I was just imagining it. The feeling seemed to fade the moment I concentrated on it. The discs and axle assembled perfectly, of course. I fought to keep my face impassive, despite an uneasy feeling in my gut. Aiken had done a very good job. And then they started to spin.
"Get down!"
Magister Tallyman snapped. He slammed into me. I yelped in pain as I toppled over and landed on the floor, his huge body landing on top of me. A second later, the room shook violently. I heard pieces of debris flying in all directions, smashing into walls and crashing to the floor. Aiken said a word I knew my mother would have washed my mouth out with soap for thinking, let alone saying. Magister Tallyman rolled off me a second later. He looked deeply worried. I forced myself to stand on wobbly legs. The workbench had been solid wood. It wasn't any longer. The wood was cracked and broken, scorched so badly that it could have been converted into charcoal with very little effort. Fragments of metal lay everywhere, some embedded into the wood, others lying against the walls where they'd fallen. The discs had shattered.
"I sensed a surge of magic," Aiken said, picking himself up. "It failed, didn't it?"
Magister Tallyman gave him a sharp look.
"Yes."
I nodded slowly. "I made everything, from start to finish, and it worked. You made the discs, and it failed."
"It looks that way."
Magister Tallyman strode across the room and opened one of the cupboards.
"The question is simple. How much can Aiken do before it explodes?"
"Rose was standing close to the cauldron when it exploded," I said carefully. My face itched. We'd both been badly wounded when the potion destabilized. "Maybe Aiken was standing too close."
"I was on the other side of the room," Aiken pointed out.
He sounded shaken.
"Magister Tallyman was closer."
"You weren't when you were making the discs," I countered. "Perhaps your touch was enough to render the discs useless."
"Perhaps," Aiken said. "But anyone can touch an object of power. A working object of power,"
Magister Tallyman said. He sounded pleased, even though we'd come far too close to being injured.
"It seems that we need to carry out more experiments."
Aiken looked as though he wanted to say something biting.
"The discs exploded," he said instead. "Doesn't that mean the whole experiment failed?"
Magister Tallyman was too enthusiastic to reprimand him for his tone.
"Something happened," he said patiently. "We now know that you cannot make all three of the discs without causing an explosion. That is a datum. Now we see if you can make one of the discs. Or if Cat can make the discs and I can put them together," Aiken offered.
I had my doubts. If Rose's mere presence was enough to cause an explosion, Aiken's craftsmanship certainly would too. And yet, I rubbed my forehead in frustration. The puzzle seemed unsolvable. I wasn't sure I wanted it solved, but still.
"I'll need to get a new workbench," Magister Talliman said.
He looked down at the wreckage, shaking his head in amusement.
"And probably tighten up the wards."
Aiken pointed upwards.
"And maybe do the next experiment in the open air," he added.
I followed his gaze. Hairline cracks were clearly visible on the stone.
"We don't want to bring down the building. Or even the roof," Magister Talliman agreed. "They'll take it out of my salary."
"And what will they do," I asked silently, "if one of us gets killed?" Magister Talliman glanced at the clock.
"You may as well go back to your workrooms or straight to dinner," he said. "I'll plan out the next experiment and we can carry it out next week."
I exchanged a look with Aiken, then followed him out of the room.
"That was interesting," Aiken said when we were alone. "What did you make of it?"
"I don't know," I said. "I needed to carry out more experiments. Perhaps Aiken should have left the discs alone for a while, long enough to let the magic fade. If it did fade, it should fade," I told myself. Runes gathered and shaped magic, but unmarred metals shouldn't have anything holding the magic in place. "Perhaps we can just keep asking questions."
"Yes," Aiken said.
He broke off. Janine was loitering at the door.
"Go to dinner," she told Aiken. "Caitlin, I want a word with you."
Aiken frowned, but hurried out of the room without comment. I met Janine's eyes and realized, to my surprise, that she was nervous. It wasn't as if she didn't have an excuse to be here, did she? She was an upperclassman, with access to workrooms specifically set aside for them. Magister Talliman wouldn't say a word if he caught her in the workroom. But she was still nervous. "This way," I said, leading her over to my makeshift workroom. "Don't use magic once we're through the door." Janine muttered something under her breath as I opened the door. I chose to ignore it as I rooted through the drawers, eventually digging the amulet out of its hiding place. It glittered under the light, even though it wasn't quite finished. Janine leaned forward admiringly. It wasn't my best work, but that didn't matter. All that mattered was that it was an object of power. "It will dispel every spell tied to you," I said. I wasn't quite sure what it would do if someone tried to hex her. I'd have experimented, if I could have cast the spell. "I just need some of your blood to anchor the spell form." She looked reluctant, but held out her hand anyway. I cut her gently, collected a little of her blood and wove it into the final rune. The amulet glowed brightly. It dawned on me, a second too late, that I probably should have asked her to step well back, as the spell form blazed into existence. I let out a breath I hadn't realized I'd been holding. My first commission. If it had failed, I wouldn't have received many others. "Done," I said quietly. I picked up the amulet and passed it to her. "Wear it for at least an hour, then take it off. It may interfere with your ability to cast spells." Janine draped it over her neck. "It feels dead," she said slowly. I frowned. That didn't sound good. "But I think it's working." "Good," I said. The spell form wasn't difficult. I'd have made one for myself if spells clung to me longer than an hour or so. "And make sure you don't show it to anyone." "Of course," Janine said. She reached out and patted my hand. "And I will give you that favor." I nodded. The favor would be worthless now, but later, who knew where Janine would end up? I'd looked her up in Who Is Who, Janine had the connections to go far, if she escaped her overbearing mother. And even if she didn't, the amulet had still cost me very little to make. I'd come out ahead. And this is just the first commission, I told myself as the dinner bell rang. The sky's the limit. Chapter 18.
And so, we can devise a runic network to keep a spell in place,
Magister von Rupert said. He sketched out a set of patterns on the board.
This is, a key concept in protecting a building,
I hastily copied down the diagram as Magister Grayson's eyes swept the classroom. I didn't want to get in trouble, not with him. Magister von Rupert was too focused on his work to care much about what we were doing. I'd never heard him issuing detentions to anyone, but Magister Grayson believed in ruling with an iron hand. I didn't really blame him either. A careless student who miscast a spell during practicals might easily hurt someone.
The network has other uses, of course, Magister von Rupert added.
The incantations and geomancy teacher looked at us, looking as if he were faintly surprised to find himself in a classroom.
Can anyone name one?
Turning someone into a frog and keeping them that way, Alana said.
I didn't miss the hard edge to her voice. She'd probably try to test the runic diagram on me as soon as she could, if she actually managed to make it work.
Or preventing someone from using magic.
Correct, Magister von Rupert said.
He didn't seem to have noticed the malice in Alana's voice.
A spell does not remain in place unless held there by a network of runes. For homework...
I heard a groan echoing around the classroom as we reached for our notebooks.
You will devise a runic network that will hold a single spell in place. Do not attempt to test it.
Magister Grayson added as we jotted down the assignment. He crossed his arms, daring us to defy him.
The network needs to be checked and rechecked before you actually try to use the spell.
Rose nudged me.
Would that work on you?
I shrugged. I didn't know. I'd discovered that spells fed on their target's magic, which was why they never lingered on me. I simply didn't have any magic. And yet, how could a runic network hold a spell in place past the point it ran out of power? I was starting to realize, between experiments, that a lot of what we knew about magic was incomplete. Perhaps it wasn't even so. Magister Niven's habit of poking holes in our assumptions only underlined it for me. We didn't know as much as we thought. We'll probably find out later, I said. I wouldn't mind if Rose wanted to test her runic diagram on me. But for now... Magister Grayson cleared his throat.
We'll be holding the practical lesson next door, he growled. Move it.
The room emptied rapidly. Rose shot me a worried look before following the others into the next room. I half wished Bella or Aiken would stay close to her, but I knew neither of them would be interested. Bella couldn't be seen with Rose, not publicly, if she wanted to remain one of the popular girls. And Aiken had the same problem, only worse. I was mildly surprised that he was talking to me outside class. And Alana would hex them both if she thought they were becoming friends, I thought. My sister had driven off anyone who'd wanted to be my friend, at least until the rumors had started to spread. Bella isn't happy about defying her. Magister von Rupert cleared his throat.
Perhaps you would like to come with me, he said. This classroom is not conducive to private study.
I could go straight to the library, I thought as I rose. It was too early for me to be out of class, even if Magister von Rupert wrote me a pass. The upperclassmen might let me go. I was working my way through a whole list of commissions. But the librarians would ask pointed questions. It isn't worth the hassle. I followed him through a hidden door and into a small office. No, I realized slowly.
It was larger than it seemed, but it was utterly crammed with boxes, paper sheets filled with handwriting, manuscripts and books. The only visible wall was lined with bookshelves, all bulging under the weight of yet more books. Mum would have gone through the roof if I'd left my bedroom in such a state, I thought, as Magister von Rupert removed a pile of books from a chair. There was hardly any room to breathe, and yet there was something about the room I found endearing.
"I do, know where everything is," Magister von Rupert said as he sat down at his desk.
It was covered with papers too, including a class schedule that was dated 5 years ago. I wondered if he was still trying to teach to it.
Please don't move any of the boxes.
I looked at the pile of boxes, some taller than I was, and shuddered. I'd always liked the idea of digging through archives, but I had my limits. Besides, some of the really old archives had nasty protections. Dad had told me that he'd helped excavate one, back before I'd been born. He'd come far too close to death before the ancient chamber had finally been cleared. "I won't, sir," I promised.
Very good, Magister von Rupert said. I was wondering what you would make of this.
He picked up a roll of paper and held it out to me. I took it carefully, looking around for an empty table. There was none, not within view. If there was one buried under the boxes and files... I pushed the thought aside as I carefully unrolled the paper and examined the runic diagram. It looked like a ward network, but I'd never seen anything so complex in my life. "It is very detailed," I muttered. "What is it?"
The school's defences, Magister von Rupert said. Or some of them, at least.
I looked down at the diagram. Are they really this complex? Magister von Rupert looked surprised.
The school just kept expanding, he said. We really should consider moving to purpose-built premises, but, no one wants to pay for it.
I struggled to recall the theory I'd had drilled into my head over the last 6 years. Warding an entire house was a tricky piece of work, all the more so if the building grew bigger over the years. Aguirre Hall was so big precisely because we might need the space, one day, without having to worry about rebuilding the ward network from scratch. I'd heard of buildings so old that the wards had practically taken on a life of their own. I wasn't sure if Aguirre Hall was old enough for that, but only a fool would challenge the master of the wards on his territory. Aguirre Hall was our fortress, as well as our home, and the center of our power. It would have to be a very big building, I said after a moment. Aguirre Hall was huge, but I doubted we could fit everyone from school into our walls. Sir, this network is a mess.
It was put together, over many years, Magister von Rupert informed me. I don't believe, that any of the original designers set out to make it that complex, but it grew with the school. There are parts of the school that are very well protected indeed, and other parts with very limited coverage.
I made a face. Can't someone find a weak point and break into the school?
The outer wards are solid, Magister von Rupert said. But fixing the problems throughout the inner network may take years.
Oh, I said. I looked down at the diagram for a long moment. Why are you showing me this?
Because some of the really old parts of the building are based on objects of power, Magister von Rupert said. They may need to be replaced.
That caught my attention. No wonder successive administrations hadn't dared to grasp the nettle. A mistake, perhaps something as simple as moving the object of power, might cause part or all of the network to collapse. They'd built layer after layer of wards on top of an artifact that dated all the way back to the Thousand-Year Empire. I didn't blame Magister von Rupert for being concerned about what might happen if the wards were updated. The entire school was at risk. And you want me to replace it, I said. I didn't even know where to begin. There were protective objects of power included in the books in Dad's library, but they'd all struck me as an order of magnitude more complex than the flying machine. And if I had to build them alone, I wasn't sure I could do it. It might be hard.
We do understand, Magister von Rupert said.
He let out a sigh.
But, we must find a solution soon, before it's too late.
I nodded in understanding. The family wards were tied to a specific bloodline, allowing a degree of direct control and sophistication the school's wards lacked. There was no way to tie them to a bloodline, too, not without rebuilding the entire network from the ground up. It would be a nightmare. And who would take control of the school? Jude's was neutral ground. Whoever took control would be in a position to shatter that neutrality beyond repair. "I'd have to study the plans carefully," I said. It was a very long-term project. "I think it might take years."
"I understand," Magister von Rupert said.
He cleared his throat.
"What did you make of today's class?"
I frowned as I slowly wrapped up the diagram and placed it on his desk. "I think I understand," I said slowly. "But why do the runes keep the spell in place?"
"The magic is locked into the spell form," Magister von Rupert said. "It is really very simple."
I frowned. I knew something was wrong, or at least misunderstood, but I wasn't sure how to put it into words. And yet, "when you set fire to wood for heat," I said slowly, "the fire burns as long as it has something to burn. You have to feed it a constant supply of wood if you want to keep the fire going. And that's true of spells too, isn't it? A spell remains in being as long as it has a supply of magic." "And it doesn't care where the magic comes from," I added silently. I'd proved that, to my satisfaction, but I hadn't discussed it with anyone apart from Rose. Our names on a research paper would go a long way towards ensuring that she had a satisfactory future after she graduated. But how does locking it in place keep the spell active? I struggled to put my vague concept into words. "The spell should still be burning magic," I said. "So why doesn't it run out of magic, even with the runes holding it in place?" Magister von Rupert frowned.
"It is generally believed that magic doesn't work like firewood," he said slowly. "The magic is concentrated in one place, rather than being burnt. One might, compare several men working together to lift something, instead of each man trying to lift the object on his own. The runes keep the magic from leaking away."
He reached for a folder and started to flick the pages.
"That may be why the runes on objects of power and devices of power are different in many ways," he said. "The latter are more focused on preventing magic from leaking once it has been infused into the device."
"But I don't have any power to infuse," I pointed out. "Where does the power come from?"
"A very good question," Magister von Rupert said. "You may be unlocking previously unknown magical aspects of metal and wood. It was not until recently that we discovered that the common, or garden, worm, had uses beyond the obvious. And you yourself proved that dragon scales can actually be worked into something useful."
I nodded slowly. Dragon scales weren't actually useless, but they require very careful handling indeed. I hadn't been the only one to realize that they could be used to produce a burst of raw magic, merely the only one to make it work. And yet, when I'd tried to show the trick to Rose, I'd nearly killed both of us. It did make a certain kind of sense. The potions my mother brewed would have seemed impossible to my ancestors, at least as far back as the Empire. They would have stared in disbelief as Mum brewed a potion involving spells they knew to be dangerous when mingled with potion ingredients. Maybe there was something about wood and metal that could only be unlocked by a zero. But something told me that wasn't the answer. There were simply too many unanswered questions. It might be true.